cooperation for our common good. It's because I believe so strongly in the ability of people of goodwill to reason together. And there it goes all tonight to focus our sights not on the issues which we may differ, but on the large issues on which we agree. It's because I believe so strongly in the need for us to work together. I want to speak to you tonight about the myths that divide us. Yes, we have real problems and real concerns. No resident of Queens, of New York, no local citizen in the station tonight can deny that we have problems and conflicts between groups. But let us be aware that some of these problems are exaggerated. Some of these conflicts have been exacerbated. Some of the so-called issues are better exposed as modern-day myths. Let me mention three of these. First is the myth that among the biggest problems facing blacks and Jews are those posed by extremists within each group. The sociologists refer to this as blaming the victim. In reality, this is a political diversion, an attempt to distract our attention to the real problems that both of us cause by attacks from the outside. And make no mistake, the real extremists out there aiming at both of us. The neo-Nazis in Idaho who want to build an Aryan nation are full of hatred toward blacks and Jews. Director of Communications and President Reagan's White House, who argue against the celebration of Dr. King's birthday, also opposes the prosecution of Nazi war criminals. Even if we had less in common, we would be reminded of our common interest by the enemies we share. The second myth is that black-Jewish relations are so fragile, in such bad shape, that they are somehow worse than relations between other ethnic groups. Why is it that so much public attention is being focused on relations between blacks and Jews? Why is it always our relationship that's being tested, monitored, critiqued, investigated? The day after killing at Howard Beach, the media calls for investigation of Italian-black relations. For some few white ethics in Chicago, bullet for Harold Washington, they received newspaper articles about black Irish, black Croatians, black Italian, black German relations. Even the hardest friendship would be endangered by constant laboratory testing, public monitoring, and investigation. We remain under watch and investigation. The fact our relationships have lasted as long as they have, in the face of this pressure, is a testament to its strength and durability. And finally, I speak about the third, potentially the most dangerous myth, that the positive relationship is over. Vision between blacks and Jews has split the old Roosevelt coalition. In fact, Jews and blacks continue to work together for social justice at home and abroad. In the Congress, black members and Jewish members work closely together, fighting for economic opportunity, for urban aid, and for the end of apartheid in South Africa. On the floor of Congress, the voting booth, Jews and blacks tend to vote very much alike. In 1984, despite the self-interested predictions of those who would divide us, both Jews and blacks voted for Walter Mondale in greater number than any other two groups. Last month, in our home in the city of Chicago, where great mayor Harold Washington is seeking re-election, Jewish voters supported Harold Washington in numbers far greater than any other ethnic group. In public opinion polls and in the polling place, blacks and Jews demonstrate similar commitment to the values, social justice, civil rights, and human dignity. Those are myths, but there are other factors which are not myths. It is not a myth to say that blacks and Jews may differ. It's also time to say that to one another, we can express our differences aloud, but still be friends with mutual respect. Friendship does not require formal speaking. Friends do not live in an echo chamber. speak in terms of civility. If we frame the debate within the term of tolerance, if we extend to one another the respect we owe to one another, allies can be honest and speak out without fearing that our alliance will be destroyed. It is not a myth to say that there are issues on which blacks and Jews may differ. Long as we remember that many more exist on which we agree. The bonds between us have been forged over many years of common experiences and goals. Because we have arrived at the same time at this place in history, does not mean we have not traveled different paths to reach this place. But sometimes our different experiences lead us to different conclusions. That does not invalidate the importance of our values. Blacks and Jews have very different reactions to the world or the word quota. For blacks, a quota can be a door to opportunity. For Jews, the quota system has been a ceiling on success. But because we differ on quotas does not mean we can't agree on affirmative action, opening the way for minorities and women to participate in every phase of American life. Even reaching America was a different experience for blacks and for Jews. For Jews leaving Europe to come to America was to leave oppression and arrive at freedom. It was the experience of an immigrant, welcomed and in his island, greeted by the Statue of Liberty. For blacks, the experience was reversed. It was not an immigrant experience, it was a slave experience. Leaving Africa to come to America meant leaving independence and being forced into slavery. Thus, the word immigration has a very different meaning to us. Both of us would agree that political refugees deserve the right to immigrate. Both of us will fight for these rights. Quote the prisoner is Jacob Timmerman in the jail of Argentina, Anatole Sharansky in the Soviet Union, Nelson Mandela in South Africa, who believe that the government of the United States should speak out on behalf of those unjustly jailed, not make alliances with their jailers. That is why when I went to Geneva with a peace delegation from the United States and had the chance to speak to Premier Gorbachev, I raised an issue with him about Soviet Jews. That is why earlier this month I met outside the White House with Koreans, protesting the brutality of their own South Korean government. That's why so many of us, black and Jews, white and Hispanic, marched together and were arrested together outside the South African embassies across this country. Because on the human rights issue, we must be united. Look around this room. Look at the person sitting next to you. The people sitting in your row in front of you. We're the people who care. The people who make the effort. Because we care, because we share. We had the choice not to be here. We chose to come because we care. Our enemy is not within this room, but outside. Among those who try to stop communication, to spread fear and distrust, set us against one another, because they oppose our principles of social justice and human dignity, and so they try to set us one against another. Look at this building. Think about the value of this college. The first great educational experiences this school made available. Think about the dedicated teachers and people who teach here like Barry Commoner, Alan Hennessy, and Mike Harrington. Think about how much education has contributed to the health of our nation and the strength of our society. For that, those who want to cut back education. The president's budget proposes to trim $5 billion from the federal education budget, to narrow grants in favor of laws, to lessen the number of classes that can be taught, of scholarships available, of textbooks that will be used. The enemy is not within this room, but outside among the people who talk about excellence, try to cut back education. Look at the young people with us tonight. Think of our own hopes and goals if we were their age. Think of what they mean to us, to all of us as a society and a nation. What sort of future can we expect? Some decent jobs are shrinking. America's economic base is weakened. Opportunities for employment and education are disappearing. The enemy is not within this room, but outside. Among those people who deny our young people the chance for a better life. When we understand that the enemy is outside, when we understand that our allies are inside, when we get real strong on the inside and turn to each other and not on each other, we will know the side of our fight. It's not a peace of power in Queens, among the lost of Hawk and the Maine, even the lost of Rogue in Georgia. Those extremes that threaten and divide us all. The side of our fight is where Howard Beach and Howard converge. A black gate. They closed on workers without notice. A shipyard. Dumping goods made in slave labor, South Africa travel on the South Korea to undercut organized labor. A family farm. The farmers have been driven from the land without mercy, management, or markets. A missile site threatens the human race. These are tough times for us because we are under investigation. And I submit to you, my friends, tonight, the blood and religious ethics that bind us are stronger than the tensions that restrain us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, sir, I'm here.
Is that Ruth Bloom?
Your Ruth Bloom.
I never saw this lady before.
I want to address my question to the Reverend Jackson. I had the pleasure of hearing you at the Democratic Convention in San Francisco. I was a delegate to the convention, and I assure you and everyone here that the Reverend added great luster to the occasion. So I can preface my question by stating that I, too, I'm a member of a minority. I'm a Jewish woman. And as such, I am a minority person in the United States. The question that I want to pose is one that I think is in the minds of almost, I shouldn't say almost, I would say a large percentage of the audience here tonight. You spoke about the risks of allying ourselves with our jailers. And yet there are so many people here in here, and in the literal and figurative outside of this auditorium, who have the sense that in spite of the fact that we heard so many admonitions tonight about rejecting the bigots, not hearing them, fighting them, whether they are here or abroad, many of us have known that you have identified and not renounced your association with Farrakhan, whom we consider a large bigot. My point is this, sir. Everything that you said tonight, I agree with. Much of what I've read that you have said, where I haven't been in the audience, I agree with. But I feel that you are not fully advocating the cause of true liberty and respect of people to people until such time as you do that. And I can't understand why you have not today, and are you going to tonight?
In my democratic tradition, I reserve the right to disagree with positions taken by people that I don't agree with. I reserve that right, and I exercise that right. In my religious tradition, I make a distinction between rejecting someone's point of view and rejecting their person. I have no religious basis for that. I'm not that good myself. And so, in my own sense of politics, and as a matter of strategy, I think it is a mistake for us to put, for emotional purposes, or political purposes, Farrakhan in the center of our relationship, or to put Kahane in the center of our relationships. They fit in the spectrum, but they're not in the center. They're not the biggest test of who we are and what our challenges are. There's a Congressional Black Caucus, 23 members. There are 300 odd black mayors. There are almost 6,000 black elected officials. There are major religious denominations. Cannot the sum total of these groups and their relationship have more weight than an individual in the spectrum of things? I think as a matter of strategy and tactics, it is a mistake. And I still will not measure my relationship to Jewish people by any one or any group of individuals as a litmus test for our relationship. I will not do that. Now, I hope that the audience who is responding to I hope that we can continue this about a sacred dialogue, the real atmosphere of stability, because we're trying to run out anxieties and fears to free up two people to get together and salvage our nation. This is a rather serious setting tonight, and people are getting to scoring and responding and these loud clapping for me to the monitors. We may miss something precious, a chance to make a breakthrough. I hope we do.
Eileen Garcia, I neglected to call the names of the next people in line, so I'll try to make up. Eileen Garcia, one microphone, and Gilbert Benjamin, and after them, Walter Hoffman and Bernard Goldman. Eileen Garcia. And I would admonish those who are approaching the mic, please ask questions. We are all sophisticated enough to get our point of view into a question without having to speak. Pardon?
Rabbi Turing.
Rabbi Turing.
Good evening. I didn't think I was going to get this.
There was something distorted and inappropriate about that. I think the real issue for us is, let's stop making the public schools a dumping ground for everything that we're not doing ourselves. It is the obligation of parents, churches, and synagogues to carry out their religious functions. And if they fail to do so, it really is a cop-out to expect the public school teachers to become surrogate parents and surrogate priests, ministers, nuns, and rabbis. I hope that doesn't upset you, but I feel very keenly about that's a necessary approach to put us back in some perspective.
Yes, sir.
First of all, we were
discretion about the term hiring, which had no intent, New Holland, but the main was hurt. So addressing early by anybody who was really interested in dealing with it and going beyond it, but not serving a purpose, we'll go back into that tonight. On the first night, it seems to me that what we really must decide tonight is very fundamental to our advancing forward in the dialogue. If we want to go forward, we have enough trials before us and enough common threats to do so. If we do not want to go forward, we have enough reasons to justify not doing that either. It's a very fundamental decision that we have to make. There's an ad out in the days of a magazine in Milwaukee, it's all the country last, the current Apple computer advertising campaign. And a friend of mine delivered to me tonight. This is a picture of a black face with white lips, and big eyes, and a tuxedo, and natural hazard. And it says what Al Jolson did for movies that Apple does for computers. Now, this ad campaign was put together by Mr. Alan Rosenstein, president and CEO of Omnicom Group. We can let something like this become a centerpiece and further divide us. But we can come together and say this is in bad taste and disgraces all of us. So we need to use this to divide us, and we come together and fight it. It's our choice. In a matter of a few days, a very heavy congressional report is going to come out about the Israeli-South African connection. It's very heavy, very thorough. We can use that occasion to say, I told you so. We can use that occasion to come closer and somehow do surgery on that which is evil and maintain that which is good. The choice really is ours. If we choose to go forward, the reason why I think this equal forgiveness must be equal opportunity as we move forward, you know, Mr. Reagan opened his campaign in Philadelphia, Mississippi. It's not known because there's a big air base there, a big plant. It's just where they found Swing Brooklyn and Cheney. His signal was so clear under the flag in Boston and Puget for that day. Blacks picked up the signal real fast. And within a month, I challenged him face to face, and he backed off his flag endorsement a little bit. He didn't stop when they got the big bird. And didn't stop then when he vetoed thanks on Johannesburg. And then didn't stop when he made Rehnquist the chiefest justice. Who signed a document that Jews could
for the presidency of the United States, when he and I had a meeting with one of my colleagues. There are few issues in public life that would be more meaningful for me than to be able to rebuild the Black Jewish Coalition with the same power of trust and intimacy and solidarity that we had in the 1960s, even in the early 1970s. I can't begin to tell you that in detail. Just a few things to say something about what that trust meant. There were some 12 black children who were murdered almost mysteriously in Atlanta several years ago, you may remember that. We came down to Atlanta, my own group, the American Jewish Committee, and organized a memorial service for them, also a black Jewish meeting. And we had a meeting with Daddy King, Martin's father. We didn't ask for this. We just came to pay tribute to him and what he and Martin meant to us. Clear, unequivocal, unambiguous, straightforward commitment of friendship and solidarity on everything that meant something to us, and we were equally clear and unequivocal in our response to that. Daddy King started off by saying that the stuff about Farrakhan makes me sick. You're Farrakhan talking about Judaism as a gutter religion? What would we be without Judaism? What would we be without your Bible, without Moses, without the Exodus? After Farrakhan talking about Israel destroying the world, bringing the Western European down. And then he said to us, listen, let me tell you something. When we just got started with the Civil Rights Movement, and Martin King wanted to organize the first meeting of the Black Movement in Atlanta, no hotel would open the doors to us. Only one hotel room was open to us. That hotel was owned by a Jewish man. He was the first one to open the door for us. And then he said, you know, the FBI and the Internal Revenue Service were then put on us to try to destroy us. And the Internal Revenue Service took over all of our books to try to prove that we were involved in fraud and embezzlement. Nobody wanted to touch us, except two people. One was an accountant, he was a Jewish man. Second was a lawyer, he was a Jewish man who later got Martin out of jail. He said, we don't forget our friends, and we will not let anybody defame them. I accept what Jesse just said to us in terms of wanting to look at the large picture in perspective. I think there is a mainstream, there is that history which is deep and profound, and we haven't even touched on that tonight. When I recall the National Conference on Race and Religion in January 1963, which brought together 1,700 top religious leaders of America, Greeks, Greek Orthodox, Catholics, Protestants, Evangelicals, Jews, Blacks, Hispanics, who met for the first time in the history of America on the issue of what we could do together to end racial discrimination. I served as program chairman of that conference. I had the privilege of extending the first invitation of Martin Luther King to the first national ecumenical meeting in America, at which he made a powerful speech side by side with Abraham Joshua Heschel. I know what that experience of trust and unequivocation and the depth of commitment which allowed for no, even marginality of bigotry. Now I simply have to say, I think that Jesse Jackson is an enormously gifted man. I think Jesse can make a fundamental, historic contribution to the cause of social and economic justice in America. With all friendship and respect, I think you're fooling yourself if you think that the issue of Louis Farrakhan is marginal altogether. Louis Farrakhan, when he comes to New York and comes to Madison Square Garden, 25,000 people giving him a standing ovation when he utters the most vile anti-Semitic bigotry. That is not an isolated marginal event. And we've got it in Los Angeles and got it in Chicago and got it around the country. We are not dealing with a minor phenomenon. Now, be quiet now. I want to see Jesse succeed for the sake of the Democratic Party, for the sake of justice. It may well be that indeed he's right. If Jesse Jackson becomes president of the United States, somewhere along the way there'll be a Jew after him. And maybe, if God willing, there'll be a woman after that. Christians and death to Arabs and drop them out of Israel. That scared the death of us. And I will say that you're absolutely right. And you have a right to say to us, where are you and what are you doing about it? And we are insisting that this man have his immunity removed from the Knesset of Israel, which is happening. I want Jesse to be open for me to say to him, I get scared to death when I see a Louis Farrakhan filling up Madison Square Garden and going around the country, not just Baldur Street, not just Baldur Street anti-Semitism, but the worst kind of almost Nazi bigotry which makes demons of Jews, the synagogue of Satan, the god of religion. That's not innocent talk. And when we try that with Gaddafi, then we have ideological problems of a very profound nature. We have got to deal with that as almost a mythology. It's the Vatican and the Catholic Church after 1900 years of preaching that kind of stuff and impregnating the culture of Western Christian civilization with that kind of imagery. That traditionalist church has the courage to face it and say, it is wrong, we reject it, we will not tolerate that being taught, preached that by anyone, any place, and not the Vatican Declaration to declare that. We have a right to ask that in appropriate ways that be rejected with no hands, ifs, or buts.
Operative on the day my campaign opened,
They threatened